Welcome to Problem Solve, the podcast where me and a special co-host solve all your problems really easily, probably. This is a podcast where we explore the intricate world of relationships and navigate the complexity of mental health together. I am Jeff Gunther, a licensed therapist, but in this space, I'm your host, not your personal therapist or the therapist, for our guests. This show offers a platform for open conversations about relationship and mental health challenges, providing insights and perspectives for educational and entertainment purposes only. It's crucial to remember that our discussions do not replace professional therapy or constitute a therapist-client relationship between myself, our callers, or you, our listeners. If you're dealing with personal struggles or seeking support, I urge you to consult with a qualified professional who can provide the personalized care you deserve. Thank you for being here. Let's dive in. Hello, Claire. Welcome back to Problem Solved. How are you doing?
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having me. I am doing so well.
Good. Yeah. Before we get into the... So this episode is just about like actually callers that left us voice messages on Instagram. I picked some of the ones that I think we'd be able to give some interesting answers for, and we're going to play them throughout the show, and you and I are going to do our best to give some really good advice. Before we get into it, can you tell people who you are and where they can find you?
Yeah. My name's Claire. I am a Jewish queer sex therapist based in the Bay Area, and I absolutely love it here. And everyone can find me at Sex Clarified, spelled normally with a D at the end, on all platforms. And I'm so thrilled to be joining you.
Yeah. Didn't we? We grew up in the same city, didn't we?
We did. We both grew up in Santa Monica, which is why we get along so well. We have a shared tapestry. That's our background.
You have done something that I'm just sort of like insanely jealous of, and hopefully I get to do it one of these days, is that you got to be on the Dan Savage podcast.
I was on Dan Savage. It was one of the highlights of my career so far. And I was so lucky to be able to be on there. We answered some listener calls as well. It was really exciting.
Yeah. Did you feel like intimidated or nervous about doing that?
I was cool as a cucumber. No, yeah, I was totally, I was so thrilled. It was honestly like one of the goals that I had for myself, but I thought that I didn't know it was going to happen as quickly as it did. Shout out to Dan. He found me on Instagram, started following my content. I posted a video about pegging, which he coined the term for, and the rest is history. Then I got to be on the Magnum Lovecast, and it was fucking amazing.
Yeah. He's coined a few terms. Recently hear about the like one that he's a new one that he's trying to coin called tolyamory?
Yes, tolyamory, where it's like tolerating multiple lovers without actually agreeing to it.
Right. So there's no like explicit consent, but you're like, just like, it's probably happening and I'm not going to fucking say anything about it.
Yeah. It's kind of like, I feel like it's so straight. Like, oh, my husband is like cheating on me. And like when he goes on business trips, but it's like, fine, I don't ask about it.
Yeah, exactly. So you're tolerating it. It's tolyamory. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, doesn't sound like my cup of tea, but yeah, I'm into him coining new terms.
That's the thing though, is I'm not quite sure you're like, it's probably, you can't have like an explicit conversation about tolyamory or else it's not really tolyamory anymore.
Cause yeah, I guess it's like a wink, wink.
It's a wink, wink. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What is something else? What are some other terms that he coined?
Monogamish. Broke the internet talking about how you want to be monogamish.
I did, and that was really, that was weird and surprising because I didn't think that like there would be so many people having such a big reaction to that. Which is like, I'm okay with it. But I sort of like, I also got like some really weird upsetting, kind of like hateful direct messages mm-hmm. whenever I was talking about it. So it's like, ugh, this is so fucking dumb. So I'll, you know, sprinkle it in there every now and then. But yeah, I was very direct about it and people had feelings.
You were. People had a lot of feelings. I feel like I live in a really strange, weirdo bubble in the Bay Area where it's almost stranger not to want to be non-monogamous. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, I think people really feel like it's a personal affront on them when you talk about non-monogamy a lot of the time, which is, yeah, it's, you know, to each their own.
Exactly. Yeah. But today we're going to go through some of these callers' questions and we're going to do our best to answer them. And we're going to start.
So excited.
With, I know. I'm really excited too. I remember collecting all of these questions a couple weeks ago and now I've totally forgot what they were. So it's just going to be like a real kind of like on the fly. Let's see how good we are.
Great.
Yeah. Andrea, our producer, you can go ahead and play that first question for us.
I am 38 and he is 44 and we have been together for 2 years. Our first relationship post-divorce for both of us, and our orgasm ratio is very unbalanced. I orgasm almost every single time we have sex and he has orgasmed probably less than 10 times during sex. He usually has to masturbate after sex to achieve an orgasm. He has no problems getting erect or staying erect, but I would like some suggestions on how to work with him so he could orgasm more with my involvement. Blowjobs are unsuccessful in achieving orgasm as well, and I usually don't put a time limit on it, but I'd love to get him off more often and in different ways. How can I help achieve this with him? Thank you.
So I remember I was like fielding some of these questions and I was sending them to you, Claire, and I was like, huh, it's interesting that there's somewhat of a theme where there was like a decent amount of questions from women being like, it's hard to get my boyfriend off. I don't know. And I was like, oh, I'm mm-hmm. surprised. And you're like, no, I'm not that surprised.
Yeah, it was. it's a huge theme. And there were so many questions about this and I'm not surprised because people are obsessed with orgasm. I mean, half of my content and half of my client sessions are about talking about how orgasm does not have to be the point of sex. It does not have to be the way that you determine if you had successful, quote unquote, sex. But we have been taught that is the goal, that it is goal-oriented sex. And I bet you that when I've been saying sex in the last minute, everyone has thought penetrative sex. Mm-hmm. And so I would like to also undo that normalization. But I think that this is a really big question that a lot of people have, straight, gay, whatever kind of sex you're having, people are wondering about orgasm. All of that is to say, my biggest question after hearing this caller is this distressing to him? Because it sounds distressing to her. She wants to, but like, we also don't know why. We don't know if it's because she thinks that, you know, there could be all kinds of narratives happening here. Does she think she's not attractive enough? Does she think that the sex isn't good enough? Does she think, you know, she's not as good as his other partners? All of these things. Why is it distressing to her? And does it even bother him? Those are like my first questions, because honestly, if it's not bothering either of you, that, or like not bothering y'all a lot, that someone's not orgasming, then it's fine. Like, that doesn't have to be the point of sex. Like, as long as everyone is having a nice, connective, fun, pleasurable time, I really don't care if people orgasm or not. But we have been taught that orgasm is the goal, and also the way to know when sex is over. I could talk about this for literal hours.
I'm gonna breathe.
Yeah. And what are your thoughts?
Yes, I think I usually always agree with everything you said, and I agree with everything you just said. Sometimes we do disagree. Here's the thing, though. Orgasm does not have to be the goal. And a lot of us can get behind that, I think. I think that's like relieving and refreshing to hear sometimes. Like, it's sort of mm-hmm. like, okay, I feel like a little less anxiety because I don't have to like hyper focus on this thing happening. But there's still something inside of us. Well, first of all, orgasms feel great, typically.
Great, yes.
Right,
they
so
do.
We want to like have them. But there's still something inside of me that even if I accept that, even if my partner accepts that, there's still a sense of like failure almost. Like, this wasn't a successful sex session. So one of the things that I like to do, so I like to have morning sex. I'm usually just like ready to fucking go. However, it's more tricky for me to orgasm in the morning. I don't know mm-hmm. why. That's just what it is. And so typically if I have sex with you in the morning, I'm going to let you know, like, we are not concentrating on my orgasm. I don't even want to fucking like worry about my orgasm because it's going to like take a while. I'm going to like get all sweaty about it or something. Like let's just like have fun and see what happens here. So sometimes it's about like taking the pressure off of being like, we're not orgasming or I'm
yeah,
not orgasming.
Yeah, by being very explicit about it. Yeah.
Yeah, being very explicit about it. I do also wonder if it's a problem for him. I imagine maybe it could be, but it's interesting that she's the one that's calling. And I would also ask, like, what are the narratives that are attached to this when he doesn't mm-hmm. you know, I'm not good enough. I'm not, I can't compare to his past partners or something. However, something like personally that I've experienced, when I like go from a partner that I've been having sex with for years, and then mm-hmm. I start doing sex with somebody else regularly, there's always an adjustment period mm-hmm. where, and it like, I think it's like an emotional mental thing, but it's also very physical. So if I haven't been orgasming inside of you, or like mm-hmm. I was, you know, like wasn't orgasming inside of somebody for like 8 years, and then all of a sudden I'm with somebody who's just like, no, we can like orgasm. I can orgasm inside of you. All of a sudden, my body has to reset because I've been stopping mm-hmm. myself for mm-hmm. so long. mm-hmm. So then to like allow myself to do like a full orgasm while I'm like penetrating you, that takes time, and that could take months sometimes. Or the way you give a blowjob compared to like the other way I got a blowjob, even if they're both great, it's a little different. And my body was like set up to come in a very specific way, and now you're doing it, you're pleasuring me in a different way. So now I have to kind of adjust. Why are you making that face, Claire?
Every time you say you do it, it's really hard for me not to think that it's like me doing it. I want everyone to know that Jeff and I are not having sex.
yeah, that's a good disclaimer. But if we ever were, yeah. this would be a problem.
Yeah, this is where, exactly like, how you would talk to me about it.
Yeah, exactly. This would be the issue where I almost feel like I want to tell partners way before I have sex with them that it's going to take a little while to figure out.
You right. should 100%. This is okay. These are my favorite kinds of partners to have sex with, who sit me down before we even have any kind of sex, before we take any clothes off, and say, hey, Claire, here's what to expect with me in the bedroom. It might take me a while to orgasm. I might not orgasm at all. I actually get really anxious the first few times that I have sex with someone, or for the first 6 months that I have sex with someone. Or if I'm having sex with someone who has a penis, like, it's really hard for me to orgasm with a condom on. Are these people using condoms? I have no idea. You know, like, is that a shift from post-divorce? Because they said mm-hmm. it's post-divorce. The yeah. other thing that I want to mention is, like, this dude is 44 years old. And like, once we hit our 40s, even in our 30s, bodies start to change. Orgasms are not as reliable as they maybe once were in our 20s. I'm like, that's okay. And so potentially, like, that's also part of what's going on. I also, you know, maybe he's super anxious about mm-hmm. orgasm. Maybe he's not. Maybe he doesn't give a shit that he's not orgasming. Maybe this was normal in his last relationship as well. Like, these are all things that I would want to know. And I think, Jeff, you mentioned something that's important, is that, like, this takes practice. This, mm-hmm. it's like in actual physical form, right? Like, we can talk theory all day and be like, yeah, orgasm doesn't matter, like, whatever. And I preach that all the time. When myself or one of my partners does an orgasm, sometimes I'm like, oh, did we do what we wanted to do? Like, are we chill? Like, if we weren't very explicitly saying it actually doesn't matter if I don't orgasm or whatever, like, sometimes I do question, did that feel good? Was that quote unquote successful? Then I have to catch myself and check in with them. Because if I'm wondering that, they might be wondering that. And I can say like, hey, how did you feel about that? Did you want to orgasm? Did you want to try something else to see if we can? Are you feeling good? Are you feeling satisfied? The other thing that I also like to ask new partners, especially if it's a penis owner that's in their mid-30s and up, is saying, what is your relationship to orgasm? Because that gives them, like many times, I will have responses that are like, oh, thanks for asking. It's actually way harder for me to orgasm in X, Y, and Z ways now. This has changed in this way. When I'm wearing a condom, let's just not even believe I'm going to orgasm, you know, like, and mm-hmm. So I think asking that question of any new partner is like gives you a great non-judgmental arena to talk about, you know, how they might relate to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Ugh, I love all that. There's also, you know, you're talking about how when we get older, our bodies start to change. And sometimes mm-hmm. that means that it's going to be a little more tricky or difficult to orgasm, or it's going to take a longer time. Mm-hmm. There's also like, I don't know if other people feel this, but it's sort of like what happens when you experience that is almost like you have to kind of like grieve your youth in a way.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Where like, yes. For me, my dick was like coming all the fuck. I couldn't stop it. Right. And now it's something yeah. that like is, I have to be more mindful and thoughtful about mm-hmm. it. And I mm-hmm. hate that. And I don't like that. And I wish that it was like how I was when I was 22 years old, but mm-hmm. that's not the case. And with that comes like, I'm older now, I'm an adult, and it's really difficult to grieve your youth or to wish that you were younger. But, you know, so there's, it's not just a physical thing, like, we're also saying it's a mental and emotional thing.
1,000%.
If we're going to give advice to this caller, it seems like we'd just be like, see if you can take orgasm off the fucking table. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and like spend as long as you need. See if it's a problem for him. If it's a problem for you, what are the narratives that you're attaching to it? Mm-hmm. Also, like, you know, ask him specifically, what do you like? How can I please you? In what sort of ways? He might mm-hmm. have to like understand that his body is getting older. He might also have to like take time. It's a little tricky to adjust to another person, right? Is there anything else mm-hmm. I'm missing there? I think that's... Basically,
I think, yeah, like negotiate what you want orgasm to look like in your sexual mm-hmm. relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Problem solved. Okay.
Great. Yeah, we solved it.
Andrea, go ahead and play our next call for us.
Hey, Jeff. Love your podcast. I listen from Australia. I just have a sex question. So... my boyfriend and I have been seeing each other for about 4 months, and both of us have come from, marriages where I guess like over time our sex lives kind of died. but since seeing each other, like our sex life is amazing. We have a really beautiful time. There's not like this huge focus on, orgasm, although that also happens. But the thing is, my boyfriend has never really identified as a very sexual person. And he sort of, I guess, has been a bit surprised, a bit taken aback by how much he's been wanting kind of sexual intimacy with me. And like, I guess being the start of a relationship, you know, things are always pretty hot and heavy. I just can't get it out of my head that like things are gonna end up the way they were in both of our marriages, and that like this is just going to be like early fireworks and then things are going to fizzle out. And I know that's natural, but I'm just wondering, is there like a mindset shift or something we need to do to kind of, I don't know, just continue to foster like intimacy in our relationship even beyond the honeymoon phase, which I'm sure will end soon.
I really like this question, and
what
I like
a noise.
That.
Tell us what that noise meant to
that
you.
That noise
Jeff.
Was I can identify. Right?
That's what like, I heard. I yeah. heard so much of your own.
Because it's funny. I think that most of the time I fool myself into thinking like, oh my God, this like sparky chemistry, hot fucking sex that's happening in the first 6 months of the relationship, this is definitely going to continue. And then I start to like grieve it. Like, oh no, maybe it won't. It's almost like, you know, when you take Molly or ecstasy, Claire, I do this all the time. I'm on Molly right now.
Never. Okay. Yeah.
Well, when you take Molly, you do it and it feels great. And then sometimes you reach this moment when you're on drugs, so I've heard, that you like start to fear like, oh no, I'm not going to feel this good forever. And I'm going to start to come down.
And then you feel sad. Yeah.
And then you feel sad and you fucking ruin your high. Right. I'm not sure that I don't think that that's what's going on here quite yet, but it makes sense that you're just like, this is so good. And I want to extend this for as long as I possibly can. Right.
Yeah, of course. Don't we all? I fucking love the honeymoon phase. We've talked about this before. I love the honeymoon phase and I love hot sex. What is there not to like about it?
What do you think makes sex so hot in the honeymoon phase?
Well, I think that this is how what you can continue into the rest of the relationship. What makes sex so hot in the honeymoon phase, what I think is that you're prioritizing it is that was the most sex therapy answer I could possibly give you, but it's truly that you are anticipating it, that you're probably talking about it. And if you're not talking about it, you're flirting a shit ton. There is this sexual energy that you are cultivating in the beginning of the relationship that is very spontaneous because it's the beginning and you're excited and it's new and there's novelty and all that kind of good shit. And that, I think, gives so much to the hot sex in the honeymoon stage. And what we don't do for much of the rest of relationships and why sex sometimes declines in satisfaction or hotness is because people stop prioritizing it. They stop flirting. They stop anticipating. They stop putting that kind of effort into it. And that, I think, really leads to more of a dissatisfying sex life if you're trying to keep up something similar. Notice I did not say the same. Something similar to the beginning of your sexual relationship.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that you've talked about it, or maybe we've talked about it on an Instagram Live, that like there's sort of your spontaneous sex in the beginning might not actually be as spontaneous.
Oh, we talked about this. I gave this to you in the Instagram Live that, yeah, and you loved it.
I love it.
It's that it was never spontaneous. Like people are like, oh, in the beginning of the relationship, it's so hot. We just like have so much sex and it just happens. Nah, dude, it didn't just happen. You set up a date. You groomed yourself. You knew when that date was. You knew you were probably going to fuck your partner. You like got all ready for that date. You saw them. You kissed them all hot and heavy. And you knew later after dinner, although if we're going to go with Dan Savage, you should fuck first before dinner. But you knew later after dinner, you were going to go home and fuck. And it was going to be hot. And that is not spontaneous sex. That was totally fucking planned. When I sit down with couples in my office and explain that, it blows their minds. And it is one of the best moments of therapy because then they get to bring that back into their relationship because people will initially, a lot of the time, not like the idea of scheduled sex, quote unquote, scheduled intimacy, honestly, because sex is not, you know, always on the table. You want to schedule intimacy. But people won't like it because they'll feel like, oh, but then it's not sexy, then it's not fun, then it's not, you know, X, Y, and Z. And really, you were never having that much unscheduled sex, baby. It was always scheduled.
Exactly. And what we schedule, we prioritize. You put everything else that's really important on the fucking calendar. So why aren't you going to schedule your intimacy as well? I get it. It doesn't feel as sexy when you're like making a Google Calendar event.
Unless you're Polly.
Right.
We love that shit.
Exactly. But so that's like one of the mind shifts, right? Mm-hmm. Is to be like, okay, well, it was never really spontaneous to begin with. It was because we like continued to anticipate it. It's because we both fed into like the sexy, sparky chemistry and energy that we were creating together. Yes. That is something that we're going to have to like try to continue. Also, obviously, I guess like when you first start having sex with somebody, it's a really novel experience, right?
Oh, yeah.
You're
oh, yeah.
doing sex to a new body, and
you're
it's
doing
so fun.
Sex.
You're so it's so fun to like explore their body and figure out what it is that turns them on, and for you to tell them about your body. It's this really great journey and adventure that you can go on together. And so eventually, kind of, there's a time where it's almost like, well, I know your body really well. You know mine. We like know a lot of the positions that we enjoy, and it starts to feel like a bit stale because it's not as novel. So obviously go ahead and continue to try to add novelty to it. It doesn't mean that you have to like hang from the rafters or do blood play. I have blood play. Well, I will always say,
guys, Jeff just went super extreme. No.
Blood play. I will pass the fuck out. Whenever I see blood, I faint.
Like, oh, I know. We've also talked about this. If anyone wants to go back into our Instagram lives at the end of one of them, Jeff talks about if he even hears about, what are you, if you hear about some kind of like surgery,
right,
you faint.
It's actually,
and okay, breathe.
I have
in their nose.
I have to tell my clients the first when I like do an intake with them that if you're here to talk about your surgeries, I'm not your therapist.
This is part of Jeff's paperwork.
I think this
is one of the best fun facts about you, honestly. Fuck the 90s bands. It's that Jeff.
Right.
Yeah. Out.
And I have passed out over 100 times in my life, not in session. There was only one time where I came very close to passing out in session. I had to leave the session. It was the most embarrassing therapist moment ever.
Holy shit. Therapists, they're just like us.
And this was back when I was a baby therapist. I was like 26, 27. And I didn't tell this couple.
Oh,
this
no.
is a thing. And so they were telling
about their surgery.
Yes. they were talking to me about their very detailed labor that they went through when they had a baby, which is
some
of the most stuff happens, right?
Oh,
when
yeah.
you're like so many things happen to a body when that happens. So I had to get up and leave, and they were very worried for me. It was a first session, and they didn't come back. That was
It sounds like you were the wrong fit. it was a hard learning lesson. You've passed out over 100 times. What was the first time?
When I was a
child.
That's
what I want to know. Yeah. How did you figure this out? It's like figuring out you're allergic to something, you know? Right.
It was when I was like in first grade, it must have been. And I was playing soccer on the soccer field.
In our hometown of Santa Monica.
In Santa Monica at Roosevelt Elementary School.
And you went to Roosevelt and I went to Grant.
Oh, cute. Somebody kicked a soccer ball and it hit my finger and my nail peeled back a little bit. And I was looking at it and it started to bleed. And then I passed out and I fainted. And then I woke up in like the nurse's office and I didn't know what happened. And I was a little boy that liked to play sports. And I routinely saw kids and myself get injured. And every time that would happen, I would just pass out. I would just pass out.
Oh, my God.
Poor little Jeffrey. Yeah, that was tough.
Oh, Jeffrey. I have a really unhinged question for you.
Sure. Let's hear it.
What happens when you see period blood? Are you just like, we can't, don't even get close to me? Like,
that was also the first time I ever saw period blood.
Out?
No, I didn't pass out, but we had sex. She was on her period. And then I pulled out and I was like, oh my God, it looks like I got shot in the dick. Like,
did you pass out?
No, but I came so close to pass. I had to like lay down and breathe, and I know how to like get through it now.
Did she know that this was a thing?
No, I didn't want to tell her that it was a thing.
You didn't want to tell. You were just like, let me just talk. Let me just make this.
Well, I didn't understand how bloody it would get on my body. I don't think that anyone really understands until you do it. And then it's like,
we understand. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy.
It's so crazy. So now, if I do period sex, I'm like very mindful of not looking at what it does to me. And
you're blindfolded the entire time. I get it.
Yes. What are we, why are we talking about this?
I had to know. Okay, we're talking about how to keep the spark alive. It's clearly have sex with Jeff on your period. That's how to keep the spark. You want some novelty, baby? Let's go.
Exactly. No, so yeah. There's also like...
Because you said blood play. That was your fault.
I did say blood play, which I was inviting you, I think.
Yeah, you did it to yourself.
All my fault. I oftentimes when I'm answering this question, I talk about like reality shows because like reality love shows because they're so good at getting people to fall in love because they get the adrenaline pumping, right? They go fucking cave diving and bungee jumping. They go to the most beautiful parts of the world. But it's really
they're
just like
sex.
I think we're done. I think we're actually done talking about period sex.
Fine. Yeah. Listen, it made you laugh. All right. Okay. Yeah. I'm done. I promise.
Okay. We're good. But it's getting outside of your comfort zone, right? It's like it's doing something a little new, and it can be something small. It doesn't have to be like you're traveling the world together. It can just be in a different room. It can be a slightly different position. You can introduce dirty talk, whatever you want to do. You can keep on like playing around with all the stuff, right?
Yeah. I do. I think that it's important to note, like, this caller is 4 months into their relationship. So like, one, I want to say good on y'all for like thinking proactively. I think that how to make sure your sex life doesn't die is to continue to talk about it, to continue to put effort into it. And I think like, I hear the fear in this around like their sex life, their new exciting sex life turning into a sex life that they didn't like or want, that they had in their previous relationships. And I think that already, ideally, it's different because you're thinking about it, because you're talking about it, you're communicating about it. So that already means that it's going to be a different sex life. And so continuing to prioritize it, to understand and acknowledge that it will change and it will shift and it won't ever be the exact same as it was in the first 4 months, which fucking sucks, right? And that sucks. And that's okay. And like acknowledging that and then letting it be what it will be with as much effort and intention as possible.
There you go. Problem solved.
Problem solved.
You're welcome. Andrea, next question.
I have a question about talking during sex. I'm a woman who has sex with men, and it seems like the majority of men really like to talk during sex, especially talking dirty. And I don't see anything wrong with this. I just don't really have that desire, maybe even to talk at all. I'm just curious, am I the odd one out? Is it weird that I don't want to talk and I just want it to be silent or fewer words? What's this all about?
Jeff, as a man, I want to know.
What if somebody was like, I want us to be silent while we're doing this? Is that the question?
No. The question is, I think she wants to know, am I normal? First of all, there's no normal in sex. Everyone, we pretend there's normal. There's no fucking normal. If you don't want to talk, you don't want to talk. That's fine. I think it's interesting that it's posited as like men want to talk during sex. I'm a woman. I like to talk during sex. I also just like to talk in general. Like that's a thing about me. Yeah.
You like to have a little chat when you're having sex. I get it.
Listen, but I do that sometimes.
As a man, I'm going to speak on behalf of all men.
All men. That's what I was hoping for.
You know, Claire, I can go either way. I enjoy talking. It's something that I prefer, but I don't need it. The problem is that like, if we're not talking and it is completely silent, all of a sudden that feels very intimate. which is like, okay, I'm down for like, I know.
Intimacy.
Right? Like, I don't want to make love. I just want to fuck you, right?
you don't want to make love. Is that the difference between making love and fucking is not talking? Uh-huh. So is it silence, though? It's like silence equals like moaning and shit, right? Like, that's what we all mean by silence, or is it just like complete silence?
That's what I imagined, that it was complete silence, just like no words, just vibes, you know?
Listen, this is why I always play a sex playlist in the background.
Oh, I can't stand a sex playlist, Claire.
One of my favorite things to do in life is to say, hey, Google, play sex playlist and see what happens. Or Alexa. It's different. I hope everyone's Google just turned on.
No, right. The problem with a sex playlist, Claire, is that when you're doing it and you're having it and there's music going, there's like this pressure to have sex
to go with the music,
to the beat, to the rhythm, and that puts a lot of pressure. And now all of a sudden, I'm not the one. We're not the ones that get to decide what the rhythm is. That we're like slaves to the music that's telling us right. There's just like this third person.
This is
all
such
of a sudden.
Strong language. Slaves to the music. I love a sex playlist. I mean, I think it takes the pressure off of having to make as much noise, because unless you know your partner super well and you know what their preferences are around how they like to have sex, it's, you know, I mean, I'll have sex with music or without, whatever, but it depends on the partner. Like, especially if it's in early days, I'll put music on because I'm like, I don't know if you like to talk the whole time. I know that I like to just like have some kind of noise happening in the background. Like, it feels like less pressure-y. Also, not going to the beat. That's why you do like lo-fi house. We're learning a lot about me.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a mistake that I put on my like pop punk and Blink-182 is playing. Oh, like, that is not. Jeff, that's the only thing I have is just like Blink-182 and Green Day.
Yeah, you're right. That's the only thing, not a surf. That's all you'll listen to.
Yeah. I have done it to a sex playlist, and there have been some like pretty decent ones out there, but usually like no lyrics, please. The lyrics
No. It has to be lo-fi, house, smooth, some kind of like just beats. That's what I think of. So if we're defining, to me, having silent sex is like there's music on in the background and we're not saying anything to each other. It's just like moaning. But I also, like, to this caller's question, like, you talk to your partners. Like, if they want to talk dirty, like, is it chill with them if they're the ones only talking dirty? Do you have to respond? Can you just like make mm-hmm noises? Like, can you tell them that like this is what feels good for you and like own that? Like, find some power in that. Like, you are allowed to have your own preferences. And lots of people don't want to talk during sex.
Yeah, lots of people don't want to talk. It can actually be like a fun little sexy game when it's just like, don't say anything. I don't want to hear any sounds, right?
And then you go.
There's tension that builds. It's very, very, very hot. But you're not weird. There's nothing wrong with you. You can express what your preferences are. However, if you're with somebody who is a big talker, and also wants you to talk, and you don't want any talking, you might have to find a compromise, right? So that might mean that, like, one time you do sex, there's lots of talking, another time there's not much, there's just, like, when you're, like,
it's a negotiation.
Concentrating. Yeah. There's, like, lots of different ways to split this up, but we don't want you to feel shame around not wanting to talk. That is totally fine and okay.
You're allowed to have your sexual preferences.
Yeah.
Maybe also love when you say do sex. That's my favorite thing when Jeff says do sex.
I mean, it's like an action, right? We do.
You do sex.
You do sex. Yeah. Maybe put on headphones. Should she put on headphones if he wants to talk and she doesn't want to fucking hear it? A white noise machine?
What?
Turn that shit way up.
She's the only one wearing headphones and then he's
like
not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No,
that's not hot. Okay.
I don't know about that. Listen, I don't want to yuck someone's yum. However, I did not read this as she wants to tune them out. What I read this or heard this as was she doesn't know how to engage. I mean, it could be like a hot kink thing if someone wants to wear earplugs or something. It's It's not for me, but I'm not going to yuck anyone's yum.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think we solved that problem for sure.
Solved. Check.
Uh-huh. Andrea, next question.
Hey, Jeff. Love your page and podcast. I have to say, after talking with so many of my girlfriends, married and unmarried, we all have a huge problem where the man in the relationship stops initiating sex. And actually, this is a reason why I've broken up with several boyfriends. And, you know, some might be for different reasons, embarrassment, or I don't even know what it is anymore. My one partner just, or ex-partner just told me he had ADHD and it made him overwhelmed and overstimulated, and that's why he stopped enjoying it. But a majority of guys these days are just not initiating more anymore, and we don't know what to do. Usually, or traditionally, it's always the females that are uninterested.
It sounds, the way that she's talking about it, it sounds like it's an epidemic. Like, what are we going to do with our men? They're not.
It does. It right? is They're an not epidemic.
Initiating. Yeah. Have you? Is this something that you've heard, that like men, as we all get older, are initiating less?
You know, I don't hear this specific thing that often. However, I do hear quite often, most of the sessions that I do with my clients, is that someone stops mm-hmm. initiating, like mm-hmm. one partner stops initiating, and then that creates a dynamic that's very unsatisfying, usually to both people. Mm-hmm. And so if we're kind of like going to take out of the story, if we're going to go zoom out of the men aren't initiating and what do we do, and we think about like, one person in the partnership stops initiating, maybe someone who was previously the initiator, and this is a really big dynamic shift, and I am unsatisfied. How do I deal with this? I feel like is another way to ask this question.
That is another way to, and I like that way a little bit better. but who knows? Maybe this is some sort of like epidemic. I haven't heard too much about it either. But, you know, I'm trying to figure out like why this might be the case for her and her friends, if this is like an actual trend. It's not uncommon for us to avoid sex because it starts to feel emotionally messy or loaded, right? Or maybe there's like shame involved sometimes. And so the best way to like not experience uncomfortable emotions is to avoid it. And you might be finding men that enjoy or try to avoid their emotions or mm-hmm. get out of like uncomfortable situations. So you might have to like see if you can find some guys that are a little bit more comfortable having uncomfortable talks and talking about things that feel a little weird or awkward. I don't know. I'm not quite sure. But there is also something kind of jarring that if you're in a relationship and somebody's doing a lot of initiating and then all of a sudden it wanes or it stops, you're going to read into that. Like you're going to feel hurt, confused, upset. There's going to be all these narratives of like, what's wrong? Is it me? Like, are they not into this relationship anymore? Right? So that is a weird or a difficult thing to experience.
Yeah, it can be totally distressing. I mean, mm-hmm. there are so many questions that come up for me around this, you know, one voice note. And one of them is, when you speak to your partners about this, what do they say? It sounds like her most recent partner or one of them noted that he had ADHD and it was overstimulating. And so then my next question is like, well, then how did you guys negotiate around that? Like, I'm not sure that there was the next step. Like, we're not looking for excuses, right? Like, we're looking for understanding. We want to be curious. Like, if a dynamic shifts in a sexual relationship, that tells us that something is going on. And so we want to be curious about it. We want to understand what's happening for our partners. We want to be able to share compassionately and non-judgmentally what's happening for us. So, I mean, if I was putting myself in one of these women's shoes, I would want to go to my partner and say, hey, babe, I have noticed that, you know, you're not initiating as much as you used to. Can you tell me a little bit about that? What, you know, what's Has that been your experience? It's making me feel like I'm feeling really disconnected from you, and I'm feeling sad about how we're not having as much sex. And I'd really like to figure this out with you. What do you think? Mm-hmm. And yeah, like really not making it and like an attack, but like a curiosity, and we're working together to figure it out.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Instead of what the fuck is wrong with you? Why aren't you fucking me anymore?
Exactly.
Yeah. Cause then he's just going to feel shame or defensiveness or, you know, right. And that's not a great way to have that talk. I agree. Things change in relationships, and if we don't address them and we just like let them be and we avoid it forever, then there's like a big part of the relationship you're missing out on now. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be in a long-term, successful, healthy, good relationship, you're going to have conversations about why something is happening and then do some like problem solving together, right? Mm-hmm. And like we've said before and in our last episode that we did with Gabby, there's so many invisible landmines. These are mm-hmm. really difficult conversations to have. Go into it open-minded and with compassion. Otherwise, yeah, I don't know. I think that's like the only thing that you can do, right?
Yeah.
So, or date younger men, right? Is that what?
I was going to say, just like trade them out, get a new boyfriend.
Right.
Just kidding.
Also an option.
Yeah, they're just like Ken dolls, right? You're just like, next.
Yeah. Okay. Andrea, next question.
Okay. It's a bit hard to talk about this, but I've never been able to come before alone or with someone else. However, I'm pretty sure I know how it feels because sometimes I'll wake up from dreams out of breath and incredibly aroused, feeling like what I assume to be like a wet dream. Like it feels like if I knew what it felt like that I had just come. But the problem is often it's after sex dreams about people that I have zero desire for, if like even repelled by, like coworkers, friends, or even sometimes family members. So while I'm super aroused, I'm also incredibly uncomfortable and feel a bit violated by my own brain. I have no history of abuse. So while I'm confused about why this happens, I've accepted that it's not like it's something I can control because it just used to drive me crazy. But I don't really know where to go from here. I don't really like doing it myself and trying myself to see if I can get there. It's just really hard for me to focus and my mind strays, but I also don't have a consistent partner anymore. So that's the problem.
Oh my God. There's so much in the,
there's a lot.
Also another disclaimer I give to clients when I first start doing therapy is just like, I'm not your dream guy. I don't know what the fuck dreams mean. I get so bored when anybody talks about their dreams.
I'm not your dream guy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm your dream guy, but I'm not your dream guy. Right.
I fed that up to you. Yeah.
Yes. I tell my clients that I'm your dream guy. Not your dream. Anyways. And this is one of the reasons, like, dreams can be so fucking disturbing, right?
Where, dreams are nuts. Absolutely. I basically feel like I'm tripping acid every night and I remember them all. It's so crazy.
Yeah, I know. It's disturbing. I have no idea why you're having these like sexy dreams about people that you don't like or family members. I do know that it does feel incredibly disturbing and upsetting. And I don't like that orgasms are being linked with these like upsetting experiences in your dreams, right? Like that sucks. I can understand why you want to sort of avoid it in that regard.
Yeah. It also, I mean, I want to congratulate this caller on being able to unhook from the like disturbingness of these dreams, because it sounds like it used to really bother them and now they're able to kind of be like, okay, this is kind of kooky and I'm just gonna like let it be. But I think this also links to like sexual fantasies. Like, although this is not necessarily someone's sexual fantasy around their coworker or family members or whatever, like sometimes people do have sexual fantasies around people that like they don't actually want to have sex with, and it can really freak someone out. And I just want to normalize that, like, if you have a sexual fantasy around someone that maybe feels inappropriate or like you don't like actually want to act on it and have sex with that person, like that's okay. That's why it's a fantasy. You don't have to act on your fantasies. So yes, there's that.
Exactly.
Note.
And I wonder, do you think that they're getting the idea that maybe like the only way for them to have consistent orgasms is to do it with people that they're not actually, that they don't want to be with?
Well, it sounds like they just don't know the avenue towards right. orgasm at all. And it sounds like the only way that they've been able to have an orgasm potentially has been via like wet dreams, essentially. Mm-hmm. So that I think adds to the confusion of like, how am I gonna get this? I wanted to double click on the I don't want to do it myself note mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. the orgasm. And like, why? Like, what? Like, you are your best instrument to practice with. Like, you have access to yourself whenever you want. You get to like control the environment. You get to decide what toys you may or may not want to play with. You can figure out the pressure. You have the direct haptic feedback. And I understand that it can feel overwhelming when you're really focused on the goal of orgasm, or you don't know when orgasm happens, or you get distracted or whatever. But I think that like, those are all things that we can control for, we can work through, because relying on someone else to potentially give us orgasm is a really great way to disappointment.
Exactly. I was wondering about that too. And I got the feeling that like, she doesn't want to do it on her own, because when she sets out to do that, she gets distracted and it doesn't work out. And then she's left feeling upset or frustrated mm-hmm. because the goal wasn't completed. And so I think you're right. Now, this is like a theme of our podcast episode today, I guess, that like maybe the orgasm doesn't have to be the goal, and that
yes,
the goal
exactly.
is just like exploring your body and seeing what feels good. And maybe that takes 30 seconds, or maybe it takes 5 minutes. And we'll see what happens. Maybe you get distracted, and then you fucking get distracted. That's okay.
Yeah. When I work with individual clients, who much of the time are vulva owners and are seeking out their first orgasm or trying to find more reliable orgasms, which are honestly, I love working with these clients because I find it very, very like meaningful. But it's, I give them a time frame. Like I, one of their homework assignments is go home once they're ready, right? Like we've built all this rapport and blah, blah, blah. Once they're ready, go home, put a timer on for 5 minutes only. And I want you to use your fingers or toy, whatever they're up to, what they feel comfortable with. Use your fingers and just explore. See how things feel. Don't focus on orgasm as the goal. There is no goal. The goal is to just see what information you can gain around what feels pleasurable, what doesn't feel pleasurable. And then when 5 minutes is up, when the alarm goes off, you're done. That's it. That's all you got to do. And then we go from there. And so sometimes I feel like, you know, you mentioned like a time frame. Like I think actually putting a time limit on it can be really liberating, because then you're like, okay, I'm not just going to like sit here forever trying to figure this out. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. at 5 minutes, I can like get up and go on with my life.
Mm-hmm. Ugh, yeah. When I do like masturbate and I want to orgasm and it's taking way too long, and then I'm just like, fuck it, I'm gonna do this anyways. Like I need to. Like then I do it and I'm just so mad that it took 25 minutes mm-hmm. and it wasn't even that great, because now I'm in a bad mood. It's the worst feeling, honestly. So I get it. I get where you're coming from. And I think that, yeah, putting a time limit is a really good thing to do. And also, like, it's okay that you don't quite know how to do it yet. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. It's a journey.
Yes. And it's normal. And you're starting out now. You're going to be a little bit more intentional about it. And we love that. And it's going to be really helpful for your partners mm-hmm. when you know your body even more intimately, because then you can tell them what to do to you.
Exactly.
I don't see any other way around this than to sort of like deliberately do these things that we're suggesting you do. It sounds like she's in this sort of pattern of like annoyance and avoidance, right? She's just like annoyed with the situation. She doesn't know what to do. She's overwhelmed with it. And I think you need to break it down. Yeah.
I also think that it can feel really fucking vulnerable to feel like I don't know how to orgasm, or I don't know how to do this thing that like all my peers seem to know how to do. Mm-hmm. And that can feel really shitty. And I want people to know that, like, this wasn't taught to us, that, like, it's all about exploring our own bodies and systems and what works for us, and that it's totally okay to not entirely know and to, like, still be figuring it out.
Yeah. A website that I like is OMG Yes, where mm-hmm. they have these, like, very good instructional videos about lots mm-hmm. of different ways to masturbate or please yourself or a partner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fully agreed.
Okay, we got time for one more question. Andrea, great. Give us the next one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so my super specific sex question is, why is it that even though I am a body positive, non-judgmental, woke in the bedroom babe, I still have an issue with body hair? My own, to be more precise, like if I'm in bed with someone and I feel like I have a little bit of outgrown, you know, body hair, I get so uncomfortable and inadequate about it. And it icks me, but what it icks me more is that I have an issue with it. Does any of this make sense? And what do you feel about it? Thank you.
Did you think that that question was going to go, that she was going to say, I don't like the body hair that my partners have? And then yes. There was a twist? Yeah.
There was such a twist. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And there's also, I think sort of like even more broadly, she's talking about how, sure, there's a lot of like acceptance, inclusivity. I'm like, she's saying, like, she's like woke and
a woke bedroom babe. I loved that. Woke
bedroom babe. I want to get a shirt that says woke bedroom babe.
Yes, please. Yes. Can we match?
Yes, yes. However, there's like this part of her that's like not attracted or is like turned off by body hair, not even with their partner, but with themselves. And it feels mm-hmm. like. Right. Like there's so many messaging all over the world that like women should have no body hair, that it's sexy.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So and it sounds mm-hmm. like that has like infiltrated her own feelings about herself and how she sees her body. And she's disappointed with herself that mm-hmm. she isn't what maybe more like evolved or something. But like, first, don't be so hard on yourself. We're fighting millennia, whatever, however long it's been, where like women have been told that you shouldn't have any body hair. Like that's what you're fighting. So for you to be able to just sort of like get over that in a matter of years because now you're woke, like, no, it's going to take like you may never like deprogram yourself enough to not have a reaction to that, right? Mm-hmm. So that's first of all. And what are your first impressions with that caller?
I just, yeah, like to me, it sounds like one, you kind of get the ick from your own body hair. And then on top of that, you're immediately critical of yourself. And it's so hard when we are judging ourselves for our initial reactions. Like we can't control our feelings. All we can control is our reaction to them, right? But then she has this double negative of like being like, ugh, and then, ugh, I hate myself for thinking this way. And it's just, it makes it worse. And it does, I think I think being compassionate with herself or around this and like acknowledging that like this is so deeply ingrained in our society, and also that like I'm wondering like what the narratives are that might be beneath the like when she sees her own body hair, she gets the ick. Like, what does it mean? Does she think, oh, then I'm less attractive, or oh, then I'm dirty or something, or like, oh, my partner won't be as into me? Like, what do those things mean? Because I feel like there's probably something else there.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, is that like first we have to start with self-compassion, because if you can't mm-hmm. be compassionate, then it's harder to get to the narratives and kind of deconstruct them, you know? Mm-hmm. So we need to kind of like look at those narratives in somewhat of a non-judgmental way. We can be like, yeah, these are problematic, but these are ingrained and this is what sort of like automatically, like the neural pathways are shooting off in my brain and here's the thoughts that are coming. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. And what do they mean? And it's still still might not be in alignment with your values, but we can start to kind of like break it down and give it a little less power. Is there, I don't know if this is the right way to go, Claire, but would you ever, God, I don't even want to say it. I think it's not.
Oh my God. Right. Say it. No, you're not going to do it.
I don't know. There's like a part of me that's just like, a part of me is just like, well, fuck it. Don't shave. Like, have the body hair. Like, do almost like exposure therapy.
Do like exposure therapy to yourself. Around it?
Yeah. But that might be a little too funny. Extreme. Or it's just like, fine, fuck it. Who cares? Like, always shave your body hair then. Who gives
that's,
a shit?
I mean, that was my initial reaction. If that's your preference, just fucking do it. Like, get laser hair removal if that's what you want.
But then are we contributing? That's like, I'm like hesitant almost to say it. Like, am I like contributing to the narrative that like you should have no, right? And I think that's her struggle. And now she's given me that struggle as well. Thank you very much.
Now we're all taking it home. Yeah. I think at a certain point, like it's about preference too. Like, I think if we unravel the narratives, and if it ends up being like, I actually just like really think I'm more attractive this way, or I feel better. Like, I feel better in this moment when I have color in my hair. Like, mm-hmm. So I'm just like, fuck it. I'm just going to have color in my hair. Like, I don't need to like, you know, figure out all of the underlying things. I can just do it. I think it's a little trickier when it comes to like body hair and patriarchy and racism, mm-hmm. and all of those things that like are on top of these quote unquote preferences. But at a certain point, like if this is what's going to work for you, just fucking go for it. Like if it's going to make your life easier, shave.
Right. Like, do you not like a certain part of your body because of the patriarchy? Probably, yes. Do you want to have your, make your own decision and have the agency to like change things because for whatever fucking reason you want? Yes, 100%. Are you supporting the patriarchy because you're doing, no, of course you're not. Right. Like, I don't think so. Right, Claire? We're not supporting. Are we? Maybe we are.
Right. But my preference is to shave my legs. And right. Can I recognize that the patriarchy is what taught me that my, like, I think I'm more attractive when my legs are shaved? Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do I feel like dismantling that in my current life, like that specific thing? No. I could. I could not shave my legs, but like, it just is not, it's not actually a priority to me to dismantle the patriarchy in that specific way. Like, mm-hmm. I can do it in other ways. Yeah. I mean, and people might come for me for that, but that's
I 100% agree. But there's a big difference between like, I'm going to choose to shave my legs versus I need you to shave your legs. Right.
Right. Like, right. Like, it's, I'm making a conscious decision. Like, I understand, mm-hmm. that like all of these things are playing into me feeling this way. And I've decided that like, I'm going to go with that. Like, that's fine by me. I have lots of friends, people, lovers who don't shave their legs. Fine. Whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very different if someone else is putting that on you, and to like really take a critical look at it. Like, is it from outside forces? Is it your own preference? How do we untangle that? I think there's like a really long, there's a long standing like critical theory around body hair and what that means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially for women.
Yeah. I think that was really helpful for her. I'm going to say.
Sure. I'm sure it was so helpful.
Oh my God. We're so helpful. Ugh, I can't take it. That's how the audience is feeling. And that's how she's feeling right now.
I knew it. I could hear them through the phone. Yeah. Groaning in happiness.
That is all we have time for. You are my favorite co-host. You're so good at answering these questions.
Oh my God. You're so sweet. Thanks, Jeff.
Everybody loves you. Go follow Claire on Instagram.
Wow. I'm here for the praise.
Yeah. And I can't wait to have you back. I'm always going to call you when I have a sex question or just relationship questions. You're so good at
solving them. Yes, please. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to one day come back. And this was so fun.
Yeah, that's always fun. Okay. I'll talk to you later, Claire.
Bye. Bye.